Okay, good morning. Thought for today is to continue with the integrals. What we're trying to do next is to expand the class of integrals that we can deal with. We mentioned right at the end of last time, I have here on the screen, that we have a concept of L1 convergence. And so we can look at some integrals that converge, even though we didn't already have a definition for them. And so that's where we're going to head next. Okay, let's get down. Okay. All right. So. Let's see. So just start out with some examples of sequences of functions that are L1 convergent. All right. So so note here we have that if we have an L1 that this function converges if we have this limit, sorry, if it's L1 convergent, then we get the limit of the integrals is the integral of the convergent limit. And so that's a situation we've already seen some. So let me just do some examples of ones we've already seen and then some new ones that come from that. So example. So first of all, we can approximate functions by step functions, and we've already been doing that. That's the what in fact the Riemann integral is. So let me just look at some examples like that. Let's see. So if we have a Riemann integrable function, on some interval AB, then we know we can approximate it by a Riemann partition, and that's gives us an L1 convergent sequence. So let's do that. So so if we also have a partition, okay, so we have our partition here, and we have our function from A to B, okay? Then we can get an upper approximation and a lower approximation. And we can just write those as functions. So let's try that. So let's see. Let's write f sub p upper of x, and I'm just going to take it to be the upper boxes that I get here. So this will be just the sup over x in the ith interval over f of x. If x is in that ith interval, so if x is in the ith interval, so x I minus one up to x I. Okay, so that's exactly that the upper function that I've drawn there, right? So it's this box function. Okay. And I guess I haven't defined it at A because I defined it at the open interval. So, so let me also take that. So let me just take f of A if x is equal to A. Okay. All right. So that's my step function. And notice that Okay. So let's see. So can anyone see what the integral of that is? Okay, so I've just got this step function. So let me just write it out. So this is just going to be the sum of Li sup over x in ii of f of x. Okay. And by definition, that's just the U of F with partition P. So I just took that upper function. So is the notation clear, or are there questions about what that means? Okay, and similarly, since it's upper, we also get that the values of my upper box here is always bigger than my function. Okay, so f of pu of x is bigger than or equal to f of x. Okay, so that means that if I take the L1 norm of the difference . So by definition, that's the integral of the absolute value of the difference. Okay, but since that's positive, that's just equal to the integral of f pu of x minus the integral, I left off my dx, minus the integral of f of x dx. Okay, so in other words, that's just equal to the upper estimate of my function f using the partition p minus the actual integral, which we wrote as u of f. Okay, that's that difference. Okay, hence we have, if I have a partition that approximates, which we always do, hence if Pn have is a sequence in the partitions with the limit as n goes to infinity of u of fpn equal to a u of f, which we always have if our thing is integrable, and if f is in R int, then this sequence ftu is L1 convergent to F. Okay, so that gives us a one sequence of functions that converge nicely. So once again, we're going to approach this arbitrary function, arbitrary Riemann integral function, by this step function, and similarly from below, go both directions. Okay, so that's one class of examples that that we get from which are L1 convergent that we've already been using. Okay. And let me just do a couple of examples of those to get a little bit of a feel for what they look like. Example. So for instance, I could take a sequence that converges to, and this is, I guess, example 12.22. In the text. And actually, I'm going to do two versions of it. So A, I'm going to take f of x, f sub n of x will be the function which is either 1 or 0. And it's going to be 1 if x is less than 1 over n and bigger than 0 and 0 otherwise. Okay, and so this will be a bounded function, actually it's Riemann integral, let me write it that way. So a Riemann integral function on the interval, let's say, 0 to 1. Okay, and so if I draw a picture, this is the function which is 0 at 0, and then it jumps up to 1 and goes for a while, and then jumps back down to zero and stays zero. And this happens at 1/n and it goes up to one. So that's the graph of my function. Okay, and so let's just compute some facts about this. So note that if I take this sequence, so if we look at the facts that we already had, is it clear what this converges to in the senses that we already had? So converges pointwise to, and also the question, does it converge uniformly or not? So can anyone see that? So is it clear what this converges to pointwise? Yes, it is. It converges to zero pointwise. That's correct. And someone also answered the question whether it converges uniformly, which it does not, right? Because the value stays one, so it's not converging uniformly. But it is converging pointwise to zero. Pointwise to zero, it does not converge uniformly. Okay. And so we have a candidate. So the question is, does it converge in L1 to zero? So for that, we're going to have to look at the L1 norm, the integral of this these functions as n gets large. So can anyone see whether that one's converging in L1? So what we're going to need is that the integral here, this area, is between the difference between this and the zero area, which is the thing we're trying to converge to, needs to be small. And so this area needs to be shrinking, right, for that to be true. And it is, right, because as n gets small, this area is just 1/n. So this so it converges in L1 to zero. And let me just compute that since the L1 norm of f of sub n minus the zero function is just integral of the absolute value of fn minus zero. Okay, but that's just 1/n. Which goes to zero, then goes to infinity. So we have that it's not pointwise, it is pointwise convergence, it's not uniformly convergent, and it is L1 convergent. Okay, so we're trying to relate these two these concepts. Let me just modify it ever so slightly. Let me take fn of x to be almost exactly the same thing, except when it's zero, I'm going to make it one. So I'm just going to change the value right here up to one. That's the only change I'm going to make. So we have one or zero, one if zero is less than or equal to x. Less than n, and zero otherwise. Again, this is, of course, bounded and Riemann integrable. So if we look at this sequence, so now is it clear what it converges to pointwise, uniformly, and in L1, in those three senses? Okay, so it's almost the same, right? Except that, maybe I'll draw a graph here. So the only difference is that now my function is one at zero. And so is the pointwise limit, right? So this is a converged pointwise to the function one if x is equal to zero and zero otherwise. So it's just this function, which is one. Just at one point at zero. Okay, and it still does not converge uniformly. But it converges in L1. And the interesting thing here is that it converges in L1 to, in fact, zero again. And it also converges in L1 to this function 1 if x is equal to 0 and 0 otherwise. Okay, so this is this fact we noted that some functions have an integral which is 0 even though they're not the 0 function. So this is what's happening here. Okay. All right. What about those examples? Okay, well, let me just note a fact that came up earlier, and this is a theorem at 12.17. Okay, so it says that if we have a uniformly convergent sequence, then in fact it is L1 convergent. So if Fn converges uniformly, to F, then Fn converges in L1 to F. Okay. So, and we already have a bunch of functions that converge uniformly, so we can make use of this fact. And in fact, it's also true. So similarly, it's also true for, maybe I'll just put it in another color. It's also true if it's just a Cauchy. Well, then we'll just write it out separately. So also, if the sequence Fn is uniformly Cauchy, then the same sequence is L1 Cauchy. I think we just write out the proof of this, and then we can make use of it. So proof. Okay, so remember what it means to be convergent uniformly. So if Fn is uniformly convergent, so if Fn converges uniformly to F, then that means that for every epsilon greater than 0, there exists some capital N, and whenever I take a little n to be bigger than or equal to n, then we have the supernorm of Fn minus F small. And you can make it whatever, however small you want. The smallness that I want to choose is, I should have said where these are, but I'm going to take it to be epsilon over the length here, B minus A. Maybe I should say that here. AB, just so you know where it is, okay? Because I didn't mean. Okay, so so this is clear, right? This is the definition. So then we can take for all epsilon greater than 0, there exists this capital N, for all N greater than equal to capital N. Just copying exactly what I have. So then what I'd like to have is something about the L1 norm. Oh, sorry, I should have said what this is. This is the soup norm, right? So then I wanted something about the L1 norm. So let me try it. So we have Fn minus F. L1. Okay, so what does that mean? So that's just the integral from a to b of absolute value of fn of x minus f of x dx. That's the definition, right, of the L1 norm. And so then this is less than or equal to, it's less than or equal to the supremum times the width, right? So this is just exactly equal to u of fn. Minus F, maybe I'll drop the X's. So Fn minus F with the partition that's just A to B. So that's the most coarse possible partition, right? And so that's just equal to the soup times the width. So the B minus A times the soup of Fn minus F, which in other words is the B minus A times the soup norm. And we just wrote up above that that's less than or equal to epsilon over B minus A. So this is strictly less than epsilon. Okay, and that's what we needed to say that our sequence was convergent in L1. This L1 norm here is less than epsilon. right? So I get it to be close. All right. The Cauchy proof is similar. I won't write it out. So Cauchy proof is similar. Okay, but let's just make use of this now. So we already went to quite a bit of work to find sequences that were uniformly convergent. And now this says, well, if they're uniformly convergent, then in fact they are also L1 convergent. And if they're L1 convergent, then the integrals, where did that go? The integrals converge. So this gives us a way to get to compute a bunch of integrals. All right, so let's use it. So let's see. Let's start with 12.19. Okay, actually, maybe I'll just start right here, just a little schematic, so to remind you where things are. So what we have here is that uniform convergence implies, as you recall from earlier, pointwise convergence. And now we have from 12.17 that that also implies L1 convergence. And we had earlier that we had this stronger notion of C1 convergence. So these are all the notions of convergence that we've been playing with in this class. So the C1 convergence is the strongest condition, and uniform convergence is, we did quite a lot of work to get, and that implied both pointwise and L1, but these two are different from each other. But we found some examples up above that converge in L1, but are not uniformly convergent. So this one converges in L1, but it's not uniformly convergent. So it doesn't go the other way. But this direction is very useful. So let's try it. So 12.19. So one class of things that converged uniformly for us were power series. So let's use those. So if we have a power series, An, x to the n, is a power series with radius convergence R. Okay, and we're looking at an integral inside of that radius of convergence. So A and B are smaller than that. Okay, so then we know that it converges uniformly in the interval AB. S of X converges uniformly in the closed interval AB, and hence S of X converges in L1 in the interval AB, and hence we get that the integral is convergent. That's what we want. So the integral of from A to B of S of X dx is equal to the limit of the integrals, and that's written as the sum. N equals 0 to infinity of a n times the integral from a to b of x to the n dx. And we can just do that integral because that's just an x, just x to the n. And so this is then sum n equals 0 to infinity a sub n. And then that integral is just x to the n plus 1 over n plus 1. Evaluated from A to B. So in other words, this is n equals 0 to infinity of A n. Actually, maybe I'll shift the indexing because it's more handy. So if I just want to get a power series back, I can write that n equals 1. To infinity, and then it becomes a n minus 1, and I have x to the n over n, just changing, replacing n by n n plus 1 goes to n. So just renaming things. And then this whole thing evaluated at B and evaluated at A. Okay? So we can just do it term-wise. Okay, so for example, this allows us to integrate any number of functions, anything that we can write a good power series for. So let's just try it with the natural log. So natural log of 2, you can write down a formula for it, and it's going to be the sum, let me see, let me get the right one that I wanted here, 1 over n to the n. Okay. This is rapidly converging. One over 2 plus 1 over 4. So this converges fast. Okay, and how do we get that since some? Okay, so we can just go back and use the formula that we had for the natural log. So the natural log of x was defined to be integral from 1 to x of dx dy over y. And we had a power series for 1 minus y, so we can make a quick change of variables. So the natural log of one minus t is equal to the integral from 1 to well, let me do it in 2 steps. So just plug in 1 minus t for x, so that's easy, dy over y. And then I'm going to replace y with, let's see, I guess 1 minus s. Okay, so then this is the integral, let's see, from y equals, so we have minus ds divided by 1 minus s, because I have dy, y is equal to 1 minus s, so ds is minus dy. And then the bounds go from, let's see, when y is 1, s is 0, and when y is 1 minus t, s is t. So that's the substitution. Okay. Where did the t come from? So here I took, take, x equals 1 minus t. So I just did that choice here. Okay, so that was my decision to put in 1 minus t. And then I took, and then secondly, I took y equals 1 minus s to do another substitution. Okay, so both of those were just my own choice of a substitution. Okay. All right. And so then this now is in a power series form that we know how to write down. So this is equal to, let's see, so I bring up my minus sign, and I have 0 to t, and this is the sum of s to the n ds. N runs from 0 to infinity, right? That was one of the power series that we worked out earlier. Okay, so this is now our power series. So then we can do this integral. So then this is then equal to the sum n equals so just copying what I computed up above here. So then I'm going to get the n equals 1 to infinity. And the a's in this case are all just 1, right? So those will go away. And so this is the term that's left. So I have s to the n over n evaluated from 0 to t. Oh, let's see, did I write the wrong number here? So this should be, yes, it should be 1 over 8. Thank you. That is correct. Yeah, thank you. Yeah, otherwise you get the wrong number. All right. Okay, and so so now we're almost done here, so we can try to plug in. We're trying to get the formula for log of 2, and let's see. So let's bring in this minus sign. So this is then equal to, let's see, I have log minus, so if I move the minus sign to the other side, I have minus natural log of 1 minus t, but that's the same as natural log of 1 over 1 minus t. And this is now equal to this same sum here. Okay. And let's see, that's almost the sum that I have up above. All right, I have a 1 over n. I have a 1 over 2 to the n. So I'm going to take a s to be a half, and then I'll be done. So so we have that if t equals a half, then we get log of 1 over 1 minus a half, which is 2, equal to the sum, n equals 1 to infinity of 1 over n, 2 to the n. Okay. So it gives us some nice formulas for things that we don't really have any approach to, except that we have them as an integral. So things that you have written as an integral. Okay, any questions about that example? So again, it's a whole family of very useful examples because we did quite a bit of work with power series before. So now you can do anything we do with power series, you can do now with this integral. Okay, let me do one more example. So this one came from chapter 9, and this was the Weierstrass function. So recall, I guess this is 9.24, the Weierstrass function. It was W of x. And it was this very jagged but continuous function. And it was a sum of 2 to the minus n. Let's see which one they use. I think it was cosine of 3 to the n x. And this sum ran from 0 to infinity. And remember what this function looked like. It was jagged. It had no derivatives, but it was continuous. So this is a continuous. And so this converges pointwise, converges uniformly. To a function which was continuous and nowhere differentiable. Very jagged. Okay, but we can still compute facts about it. We can compute its integral. If I want to compute the integral, let's do one that's particularly tidy. Let's take the integral from, say, 0 to pi over 3. Okay, and I chose that number because when I plug in pi over 3 here, once I start multiplying it by 3, I'm going to have multiples of pi here, and those are very easy to integrate over the cosine. Okay, so that gives me a little regime here where I can find that area pretty cleanly. So let me do that of this Weierstrass function. Okay, so since it converges uniformly and therefore in L1, this is the same as the limit of the integrals. So since the sum converges uniformly, and hence, in L1, then I can just write down that it's the sum of the integral. So this is going to be the sum, n equals 0 to infinity of this 2 to the n, and then the integral from 0 to pi over 3 of the cosine of 3 to the n x dx. Okay, and cosines are something we know how to integrate. So then this is just the sum, n equals 0 to infinity, 2 to the n. Sorry, I dropped a minus sign, didn't I? Apologize. Put it back in. This should have been minus 2, n, minus n everywhere. Okay. Okay, otherwise it didn't convert. So, all right, and then we have this integral. And the integral of cosine is sine. So we have 1 over n sine of 3 to the n x evaluated from 0 to pi over 3. Okay, and let's see, whenever n is at least 1, we're plugging in sine of 0, which is 0, and sine of a multiple of pi, which is also 0. So these are mostly 0, so except for the very first term. So this is equal to 2 to the 0. So just the very first term is 2 to the 0 over 3 to the 0. Those are both just 1s. And then I have the sine of 0, which of course is 0. Sorry, the sine of pi over 3, which is the interesting one, minus the sine of 0, which is 0. And then all the higher terms are just 0. Okay. So the whole thing down. It just becomes that first one. And let's see, so now this is 1, this is 1, this is 0. So we're just left with the sine of pi over 3. And sine of pi over 3, which I guess is root 3 over 2. Okay, so we can do, again, integrals, where all we really know about the function is that it converges, that we have a convergent, uniformly convergent sequence. Okay. Like this is now one convergent sequence, and therefore our integral. Okay, any questions about using uniform convergence to compute integrals? Okay, let me do one more example here before moving on to the next section. And so if I go back up here, so notice that C1 gave us uniform. Uniform, what we've been focusing on now is that uniform gives us L1. Now, the relationship between pointwise and L1 is a bit complicated, and neither one implies the other. Let me do one more example to illustrate that. So I'm going to write down a sequence that converges pointwise, but does not converge in L1, okay? So it's good to know that such examples exist, and so let me just give you one example of that. So example. And this is, actually, I'll give you two examples. So let me start with this one. So this is a sequence which is convergent pointwise, but not in L1. And it's pointwise convergent just to 0. So it's a very simple pointwise convergence to 0, but not L1 convergent. Okay, and let me just draw a little picture of it, and then I'll write it on a formula. So the picture is that I'm going to have it converging to 0 pointwise by having a little thin but tall box here that's moving to the left, okay? And so it eventually misses every point. So it's heading down toward this 0 here. So on 0, 1, this is going to be a sequence of functions that are pointwise converging to 0, right? At every point, it's going to 0. But this area, since its height and its width are the same, multiplied to 1, are inverses to each other, this area stays the same, it stays at one, okay? So it's got an area of one at all times. And so that prevents it from converging in L1 to zero, okay? So that's what, let me just write it out. So take F sub n of x equals, and it's just exactly what I've written over there. So it's gonna be n or zero, and it's gonna be n if x lies between 2 over n and 1 over n. And it doesn't really matter what you do with the endpoints. Okay, let me put them both high. And otherwise it's gonna be a zero. And so these are bounded functions. In fact, Riemann integrable on the interval 0, 1. Okay, but they are not an L1 convergent. So this, okay, and it satisfies the two properties I just said. It converges pointwise to the function 0. But it does not converge in L1. In particular, it's not L1 Cauchy. And hence not L1 converted to anything. Okay, any questions about that? Is that clear? Should I say a little more about why it's not L1 Cauchy, or is it clear why that is true? Okay, all right, yeah, let me say one more thing. So not L1 Cauchy, since, all right, so to be L1 Cauchy, what I need is for all epsilon, there exists a M, so L1 Cauchy means for all epsilon, there exists M for all N and M bigger than or equal to capital M. We have that the L1 norm of Fn minus Fm is less than epsilon, right? That's the definition. And so to be not L1 Cauchy, so we just run a knot through this whole thing, and that becomes everything switches around. So that means that there exists an epsilon for all M, there exists N and M, bigger than or equal to M, with the L1 norm of this difference being bigger than or equal to epsilon. Okay, so that's what happens when you take the knot of that upper statement. So is that clear? So that's so I'm also teaching math 108. That's math 108. So we just ran a knot through there, right? So the quantifiers all switched, and we got a knot at the end there. Okay. All right. So let's try to do that. Let's see. So the area here is one, and so the area of this difference is going to be one for this one, and one for that is going to be two. So I'm going to just take. So here to show that this is true, I get to choose this epsilon. So I'm going to take that epsilon just to be one. So so choose epsilon equal to one. Okay, now there exists M, I'm sorry, for all M. So so I don't get to choose that M. So I have to now tell you what to take little n and little m to be for each M. Okay, so we get, so now for any capital M, take, and let's take a little n to be a 2m and little m to be equal to m. Okay, so what happened is I moved this so that it's far enough away that they don't overlap. Okay. Again, the claim was that there exists these n and m, so I get to choose. So okay, so that's what I did. So I chose this one and I chose that one. Okay, but I have to, for each capital M, I have to be able to do that. Okay, so then I finish up and then I compute. The L1 norm of this Fn minus Fm. Okay, and that's just the integral of the absolute value. Dx. Okay, since they don't overlap, this is equal to the integral. Okay, and the function is either 1 or 0, and it's 1 if x is between 1 over n, 1 over n, which is m. Certainly, let me use capital M's, because 1 over n, that's 2 capital M. And let's see, where did my formula go? Oh, sorry, 2 over that. And 1 over capital M, or between 2 over capital M and 1 over capital M, right? Because those are my N and my M, and 0 otherwise. Okay, that's just writing out what the difference of those two, the absolute value of the difference of those two functions is, right? So I took the difference was 1 and minus 1, and the absolute value is both. Okay, well, so this is now just two boxes that are, I wrote it wrong, didn't I? So it's not N, it's not 1, it's N and M. So let me fix that. I'm just trying to write out the difference of these two functions, and I miswrote it, so let me write it again. So there are three possible values. It could be 0, it could be N, which is 2M, and it could be M, which is capital M, right? So it could be any of those. It could be this value, it could be that value, and it could be 2, because that's what my function looks like, right? So I either plug in N or I plug in 0. Those are the two possible values. Okay, and it's the first one, if x is between 2 over 2m and 2 and 1 over 2m. And it's the second one, if x is between 2 over m and 1 over m, and it's 0 otherwise. Okay, so that's just writing out what my function is. But that's just two boxes, they don't overlap, and each one has area 1, so this is just 2. And of course, that's bigger than 1, which is my epsilon. And that is what I needed to show to get that it does not satisfy the Cauchy condition. Okay, so that was fairly detailed. Did that make sense? Any questions about how you show that something is not a Cauchy sequence? Okay. So then the next thing we wanted to do is add some more functions that we can integrate. So far what we did is we found ways to integrate functions that were already integrable. We didn't have a good way to get our hands on them, and now we do. We can use these sequences that are uniformly convergent, and then they're L1 convergent, so we get the integrals. The next thing is to add more functions that are to integrate. And the idea is that we want to use L1 Cauchy sequences that are not convergent. It's actually not quite right. We're allowing a few that are not even L1 Cauchy, but it's basically this. Which only converge pointwise. to unbounded functions. Okay, so that's a lot of words. Let me just say what that means. So this is something you saw in Math 21. And it goes by the name of improper. Okay, so it's another way to add to our collection of functions. This is the next section, and I will do it next time. So I will stick around and turn off the recording.